listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me my friend, David Jensen. For those of you who may not know David, well, he was a fairly regular guest a couple years back, but he hasn't been on for a while. So there may be some of you who aren't familiar with him. He is a professional engineer with a degree in engineering from the University of Waterloo in Canada in 1987. He worked through 1993 on the F-5 fighter overhaul program and the Bombardier regional jet programs. He graduated with a degree in corporate and commercial law from the University of Calgary in 1997, received an MBA from University of BC in 1999, and then he became a real student of Austrian economics, which is one of the reasons that David and I have a lot in common. He transitioned to the mining industry from an aerospace industry in 2004, first through his mining industry consultancy, and then as vice president of corporate development for Western Copper Corp., and most recently as president and COO of Skyline Gold. And currently he serves as president and COO of a private mining company and provides strategic operational risk assessment precious metals consulting services through his consultancy, Jensen Strategic. Thanks for joining me again, David.
Hi, Jay. It's great to be back with you.
It's great to have you on with me. And I really, you've been talking about a possible trigger point for gold, which is why I really wanted to have you on today. But before we get to that, there are a couple of definitions and ideas that I think are really need to be discussed for our listeners because they set the stage for why you think we may be nearing a trigger point for gold. First of all, can you discuss a concept known as the Triffin Dilemma and how that has been responsible for America's chronic trade deficit, loss of jobs for middle-class Americans ever since Nixon took us off the gold standard?
Yeah, sure, Jay. The Triffin Dilemma, in general terms, says that when you are a country issuing a reserve currency, thus one held abroad in their banking reserves, that you have to act against the interests of your own country. And that's the dilemma, is that there's a potential benefit from being a reserve currency issuer, but that in this case specifically, that when you're issuing the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency, you have to export that dollar. And that dollar is utilized in global trade, whether it's for oil, for other trade that is denominated in USD. And so what is happening is that you export that dollar primarily through running trade deficits. So you're importing more goods than you export, and when you pay for those goods you import, you're exporting your dollars. Now, what harms your country is that you're also exporting jobs. When you're importing goods from other countries, you're bringing in currently about $500 billion a year more of goods than you are exporting, and you're exporting those jobs. And it's not just that $500 billion number. There's a multiplier when you look at manufacturing jobs. So you could multiply that number by 1.5 to 2 when you look at the net harm that you're doing to your economy. We're seeing now in the states that I double-checked the numbers recently. There's 95.5 million people not in the labor force, and there's 42 million people on food stamps. And if you looked using the 1990 BLS method of calculating unemployment, you'd be running around 22% of your population is unemployed.
Wow. That's significant, and you know, people, we keep getting numbers that are not, you know, that dismiss that 95.5 million people that are not in the labor force that should be there. They dismiss that, and so we have seemingly as though we have full employment. Beyond that now is what they're telling us, which
they discount those. Sorry for interrupting, Jay, but discount those numbers by saying if you haven't actively applied for a job in the last 2 weeks, then you are not in the labor force, and as a consequence, you're not unemployed. So that's how they get from 22% to 3.8%.
And then the idea that manufacturing jobs are wealth creators, They're not just hamburger flippers. They're not service jobs. They're jobs that once you have a manufacturing, a mining project or a manufacturing project, it's not only those jobs directly, but ancillary jobs, jobs to service those industries that are, that's why you get the 1.5 to 2 times, I guess, figure, right?
Yeah, and so what President Trump now is trying to, he recognizes that there is a terminal decline here and that ultimately it becomes an existential threat. If you lose enough jobs, you get social disruption. And it appears that Donald Trump does understand this, and he's saying, you know, about those trade deficits, we're done. And so parenthetically, the issue is that if you're going to reduce those trade deficits, you are no longer going to export adequate U.S. dollars. You are reducing the export of jobs, but you're also reducing the export of dollars. And as a consequence, what you have is ultimately a dollar liquidity crisis. There's a shortage of dollars globally that are needed in use of that as a reserve currency. So the point here that I'm making, Jay, is that there's ultimately going to have to be a stand down in the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency as these trade deficits are reduced and as Americans are put back to work.
Yeah, if we look at Trump's policies now, I'm thinking in terms of his tariffs, asking Europe to pay their fair share for NATO expenses, a rollback of the Iranian nuclear deal, which impacts trade with Europe and hence with Iran not accepting dollars anymore, a reduction of dollars needed overseas. You're really looking at this liquidity crisis, and I would guess there's, you know, all kinds of reasons why the establishment is so opposed to Trump's economic policies. Never mind the social policies. That's another topic. But in terms of some of those policies, do you see them as being directly related to Trump's goal of creating jobs in Middle America for people, manufacturing jobs, these higher quality jobs that have gone overseas mm-hmm. since 1971? Do you see his policies as being geared towards that then?
Well, I think what you have when you run these types of deficits for a protracted period, and by the way, there's also U.S. technology that's being exported to countries like China, which 30 years ago, they were excavating using wicker baskets. Now the technology and machinery and equipment and know-how is being exported there as well. But from a globalist perspective, what you have is ultimately transfer of U.S. wealth and transfer of U.S. economic activity to other parts of the world, which brings them up. But there's also this protracted bleed out of America, which brings America down. It levels basically the global playing field in the end. And with a globalist perspective, what you want to do if you want to unite the world into a global economy, you can't do it if there's great diversity in terms of the wealth of these countries. So there's a gradual drawdown of the wealth and activity in America and impoverishment of America and a bringing up of the rest of the world at the same time. So it's, I think this is where Trump stands as the a firm opponent of the globalist agenda, in that he's indicating that they're done with this type of a policy and the destruction that it's causing in Middle America, and you can see it through things like, as well, the desperation that's caused in terms of the fentanyl addiction crisis that you have in America and the tens of thousands of people who are dying on this drug every year in the most economically impacted areas of America and in Middle America.
David, as a growing economic power, China has been complaining about the benefits of the U.S. that the U.S. enjoys as holding the world reserve currency. Of course, I think, as you just pointed out, owning the reserve currency has its price as well. But China, along with Russia, have been setting up an infrastructure. Especially China, I guess, is funding the infrastructure to compete against the dollar hegemony. A couple of the institutions that they have set up are the Shanghai Petroleum Exchange and Shanghai Gold Exchange. Can you talk to our listeners a little bit about the importance of those institutions and how they may play a role in the demise of the dollar or dollar hegemony?
Well, yeah, sure. The the trading of the yuan-priced oil futures contract started on March 26 in Shanghai, and a feature of this contract was that its settlement and the first settlement of the contract is in September coming up, was that it is settled in yuan, but it can you can take delivery of physical gold in the Shanghai Free Trade Zone and export the gold back to the oil source of origin. And this was a trade that existed prior to 1974 when Kissinger made the agreement with OPEC that they would only accept U.S. dollars. It was called the petrogold trade. And there's a number of aspects to this, but number one is that, and I've been posting on Twitter back in April and May about this on my channel, Real David Jensen. And the issue is that you end up with, I think, a bifurcated oil market where if you're paying with fiat currencies, you're going to pay a quite a high price in comparison if you're paying with something like gold, which has a has intrinsic value. So the trade of gold with intrinsic value is exchanged for oil with intrinsic value would be much more attractive, I think, to the oil suppliers. And we've seen, I mean, the news report started to come out in September, October last year, and at the beginning of September of 2017, oil was priced at about $45 a barrel. It's recently been $75 a barrel. This last couple of trading days, it's been driven down to the high 60s. But you're still looking at roughly a $30 a barrel increase. And Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, they're quoted in an article on oilprice.com. They estimated that a $1 million barrel a day constriction in oil supply would result in their estimate of about a $17 a barrel increase. So what we've seen is in round numbers, a $30 increase in the price, which would be associated with a 2 million barrel a day constriction in supply. And Jürg Kainer of Swiss Asia Capital was on Bloomberg last week, and he said, I don't see the justification for this oil price right now. I think as we move towards September with the settlement of oil that we're going to see a new, one, a new oil price, a fiat oil price, and two, we're going to see a new gold market. And these are things that I agree with strongly in that the draw, and just in round numbers here, if we're looking at 1 million barrels a day, China's importing in round numbers about 9 million barrels a day. If they take 1 million barrel a day in oil and deliver gold bars for that, that equates to 20% of the world's gold mine supply on an annual basis. So,
wow.
You know, they can really impact, you know, with a sustained 1 million barrel a day oil delivery for gold, they can have a material impact on the world's gold market. And parenthetically, again, Russia has been accepting gold for oil as well, as we know. So we have a number of oil producers moving in this direction, ultimately, I think. And
okay, David.
Interesting that Russia and Iran are the targets of aggression of the West right now.
Of course. Now, listen, just with a couple of minutes left here, that could be one tipping point, I guess. You're suggesting it come September, we'll watch that.
Yeah.
But you're also talking about this huge amount of offshore dollars that have been borrowed by Chinese banks.
Yeah.
Your feeling is that that could lead to an illiquidity crisis, I believe, because where are the dollars going to come from with the dollar gaining value since those loans were booked, and with interest rates rising? Talk a little bit about that, because I think that was also a potential tipping point that you see for the gold markets, right?
Yeah, just finishing off one quick point. London operates on the London market, the gold market, which is 90% of daily trading, operates on a gold in, gold out basis. They have very little inventory. So any additional draw through oil or through the Chinese banking crisis, which I see building, I think will have a material impact on that market because they don't have the gold. In terms of China, it's very strange that their domestic state-run banks have borrowed $2 trillion in the offshore interbank market, in the euro-dollar market, and then they've lent these dollars out locally. And as the Fed's been sequentially raising interest rates, it's caused a bit of a problem because the interest rate on U.S. dollars has been rising both there and in the LIBOR measure. And also the fact that the DXY has risen, so the dollars in terms of yuan become more expensive. And so the Chinese borrowers, whether the banks who have lent the money out again internally to domestic borrowers, those domestic borrowers have to pay in dollars in the end, both the interest and to pay off the principal. And it's become very, very difficult for them now with both the dollar index rising and with interest rates rising. And the problem that China has is that they cannot print U.S. dollars. They can print yuan. But ultimately what's happening here, there's pressure being put on the yuan in terms of yuan holders are buying dollars with yuan and ultimately selling yuan to buy dollars. Mm-hmm. And we saw China 2 days ago, the PBOC Central Bank, had a $50 billion reverse liquidity event there in terms of a reverse repo happening in the market. So they basically took $50 billion of yuan liquidity out of the market to support the yuan. And they've been supporting it at 6.7 to the U.S. dollar, but it's being challenged again now. So over the last couple of weeks, we've seen that market price pressured twice at that level. And I think there's a real issue here. David Stockman was pointing out just how low China's reserves, even though they're $3 trillion, as a ratio of M2, the broad money stock, they're approaching 10%. And this is lower than what Thailand had during the Thai baht crisis. So if there's mm-hmm. a run on the yuan, it's a run which is beyond the scope of the People's Bank of China to deal with. So there's another potential game changer in terms of the markets and a run away from declining assets such as the yuan into things that hold real intrinsic value like gold. So both the oil market and this building crisis, I don't understand, Jay, how the state banks could have had this as a policy to mm-hmm. ultimately be shorting the dollar to that extent of $2 trillion. It's mm-hmm. it's a strange situation.
Well, I guess that's a mystery that we'll have to ponder for another day because we are out of time. But thank you so much, David, for explaining this to us. Very interesting, very important, very fascinating topic. Thanks again, and we'll hope to talk to you again sometime soon.
Thanks for your time, Jay.
You bet. Well, folks, don't go away because Keith Weiner is going to be back with me to talk about why the time has come for gold-backed bonds. Very important, another very important discussion with Keith Weiner, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdies Reward Project. In addition, Novo has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
A gold rush has begun. Recently, three of the largest gold mining companies announced strategic acquisitions in the Yukon Territories. Ahead of them was a group who had already consolidated the key claims covering the historic Klondike Gold Rush into one company, aptly named Klondike Gold Corp. Led by a team of accomplished geoscientists, the company is steadily advancing exploration to reveal the rich source of all that gold. The hunt for the next major discovery is well underway, and Klondike Gold's shareholders are strategically positioned. Stay ahead of the majors and follow KlondikeGoldCorp.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.